procedurally, we go to allowing the discharger then to cross-examine staff.
I have no cross-examination.
Okay. And then we go to testimony by the discharger. So 14 minutes is left for the prosecution team.
This is 17, right?
This is 17.
Good morning. My name is Chris Swanberg. I'm a senior staff counsel with the California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation, and I have taken the oath.
Okay.
I'd like to address the two in the same order that were addressed by the prosecution team. When the original order 054 was proposed for the minimum mandatory penalties, we accepted that order and did not oppose it. And I'm not here today to oppose the order. What we did do, in fact, to our detriment, was propose a special environmental project. And that's why we're here today, is because we had done that as opposed to simply accepting the order and allowing the executive officer to sign it. And I wish to make a point to the board that what's happening today is a clear message to dischargers in your region that special environmental projects on MMPs are something you do at your own peril. That said, we don't oppose the original MMPs for those constituents, those 42 constituent items. We previously had addressed each of those to you, and I would refer you back to our previous response. I know when you, as a member of the public, you might say, gosh, 42 violations, that's really terrible. But two things you need to understand. This plant has a discharge limit that is so low that it is very difficult to meet. I know that San Luis Obispo County is having a similar problem because they have a similar discharge order to ours. For example, trihalomethanes in our plant are much lower than they are in drinking water. And they're almost 100 times lower than the discharge permit for Morro Bay. And I'm not saying they're incorrect limits, but I am saying that it is very difficult sometimes to meet those limits, and something that affects one will usually result in two or three other violations. If your chlorine gets out of whack, you're likely to have a coliform problem if it was too low. If it's too high, you're going to have a pH violation. And so those 42 items really don't reflect a lack of concern or a constant problem. They reflect a number of problems that plant staff had, because this brand new plant that we had is required to meet a standard that's so low that even the engineers weren't sure how well it was going to work. And plant staff has essentially turned into an ad hoc engineering staff to go in themselves and try to tweak this plant to solve some of these problems. I'm pleased to tell you that we think we've got the chlorine problem under control. We haven't had a chlorine violation since last August. So we think we've got that one under control. And I also want to tell you that we are not going to likely get the trihalomethane problem under control as long as we're using a chlorine disinfection system. And we are looking at going to an ultraviolet system at an additional cost of $7 million. I thought we would have a budget change proposal to try to seek that money in the hands of the Department of Finance, but the Department of Finance has frozen every single one of our capital outlay programs right now. We're not moving forward on anything, I regret to tell you. So that said, we did propose a special environmental project, which you heard about. I would like the board to know, if there are members that weren't here, this is on top of $600,000 we have already spent fencing Choro Creek and its tributaries. And we had many miles of fencing in place, and we think that we're very grateful to Mr. Berman and the National Estuary Program, with whom we partnered on these projects. The benefit to the creek is almost immediate in many cases. There's a lack of siltation. Their gravel beds are maintained for spawning purposes. As the cover grows back, the stream temperatures will fall. So we think this is a really an excellent program for that creek. I would like to point out, in case people might not be aware, that we kind of find ourselves in an odd situation in that the protected species in that creek, in all likelihood, are there because of us. We at one time sought to move our point of discharge out of Choro Creek. It's a very sensitive water, and we were denied. And in point of fact, our permit not only requires us to discharge into Morro Creek, it requires that we discharge roughly 350 gallons a minute, every minute, 24/7. And the reason for that, Fish and Game was really behind that, is they were afraid that that creek would dry up in the summertime. And if it did, that would be the end of all of your protected species. So we do maintain that creek's viability, and we're very cautious about and recognize the importance of that. And we've spent, at this point, it's going to be roughly $700,000 improving that creek. So when you evaluate what we've done and you say, gosh, we've had a fish kill, it doesn't make us feel warm and fuzzy that that has happened at all. And I want you to understand that we do appreciate the gravity of what happens. That said, let me turn to the chlorine residual complaint. And let me maybe answer your question about the unsupported statement. The board staff says, and I quote, it says, the Central Coast Water Board staff believes other total chlorine residual violations in Table 1 above 2 milligrams per liter may have had deleterious impacts to aquatic life. It is plausible that fish kills have occurred previously as a result of chlorine releases. I don't think that's the standard by which we need to be judging the conduct of the discharger. May, possibly, could have been. Stream flows are recorded and are available to board staff. Board staff chose not to look at stream flows because that is a significant consideration. Chlorine has a very short life in the environment, and dilution factors downstream are something to consider, and it doesn't appear that that was considered. That said, some of the questions that you've asked are the right questions. We know that at least in August, with low stream flows, that 4.2 was sufficient to cause a fish kill. And I have no problem with the board considering that in terms of an amount in excess of an MMP of $3,000. We had one of 10 at a point in time where stream flows might be of interest, and it certainly seems conceivable that a discharge of 10, when we know that 4.2 caused a fish kill, might have resulted in a fish kill, but we don't know. We weren't required to look, and at that point we weren't. We do now. Fortunately, we haven't had the opportunity to do that since August. We had 2 of 20 for a total of 4 that were 4.2 or higher. Those were at a later point in time when it would be of interest to know what the stream flows were, because sometimes Choro Creek can actually be a raging river. I don't remember that it was in November of 2007, but I think that would be something board staff would need to consider. Everything else that is below that, there is no evidence whatsoever caused a deleterious effect to aquatic life. Let's talk about chlorine and aquatic life. I happen to like fish, and I have a koi pond. If I took the water out of the tap and filled my koi pond and dumped koi into it, they would die. Fish do not tolerate chlorine. They don't tolerate chlorine very well at all. But the point is when you're looking at public health issues for drinking water, that's a stated amount in a given volume of water that is constant. In other words, you look at what the residual is supposed to be, and the whole reservoir is supposed to have that residual. In an environmental release, chlorine is quickly absorbed and dissipated. And you don't have, if I discharge into Choro Creek at 2.0, 50 feet downstream, it might be 0.2. And 100 feet downstream, it might be 0. And so you really, it's hard to make that comparison of public drinking water and health standards versus chlorine in an aquatic situation. Because any chlorine in an aquatic situation is likely to have a deleterious effect to aquatic life. It's just a function of how far does the effect of the chlorine reach. And chlorine, the statement that a violation of 2.0 might is not supported by anything whatsoever in any scientific literature that might possibly be applied here, because it doesn't take into account dilution factors, it doesn't take into account flows, it doesn't take into account environmental circumstances that would cause that chlorine to go away. So from the department's perspective, for the board to just simply adopt a standard of halfway in between and say it applies to all of them across the board really isn't the way you should be doing your business. You should be looking at the individual effects of a particular discharge. In the event you're going to go above the MMP, then you need to really be looking at what effect did this have. I think you would have to agree that in terms of a discharger, you don't have any discharger working any harder in your boundaries than we are. We've spent 20-some-odd million dollars to build a brand new plant. We're very proud of that plant. We had an old plant that just couldn't meet the standards, and we had problems with it. So we do have a history with that old plant, and it's not a history we're proud of. But this new plant is really a state-of-the-art plant. And between our special environmental projects to improve the watershed quality in Choro Creek and the new plant, and the fact that we really make Choro Creek by our required discharges, I think is something to be taken into account. Lastly, I wish to remind you that we're here today because tomorrow's the state furlough day. In the past, when we've had penalties to pay, usually we've been able to borrow from Peter or Paul, and quite often it comes out of the plant budget. We don't have the money right now. We just plain do not have the money. And on that score, I would request that the 30 days to pay the National Estuary Program be extended to 90, because I can guarantee you I will not get $70,000 out of the Department of Finance in 30 days. I just can't do it. But at this point in time, the institution has been required to cut back. The state has cut 10% of salaries. And we're cutting into the bone to try to come up with money to pay these penalties. The MMPs, there's nothing we can do about. We appreciate that. But insofar as the discretionary ACL, I would ask you to consider the state's financial circumstance. You're not making us work any harder with this ACL. We can't. We're doing everything we can possibly do. So the only effect is punitive, and it's an undeserved punitive effect against a discharger who wouldn't have been here had they not proposed a special environmental project in September. We'd like you to consider that. Thank you. I'll take any questions that anybody has.
Any board questions?
Okay. I have a question.
Mr. Hayashi.
You believe that some of the discharge requirements are unrealistic?
Trihalomethane is one that I'm not sure of. I think that the trihalomethane limit, I don't know that the scientific literature supports where that's at. The rest of them, no, I don't have any problem with those limits in a sensitive receiving water such as Choro Creek would be.
So trihalomethane is your only problem with the requirement at this point?
I think so, yes.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Mr. Briggs?
Thanks, Mr. Swanberg. You mentioned that, and it was in your letter as well, that you'd already spent $600,000 for similar projects,
right,
on the creek.
Right.
Wasn't a considerable amount of that, or maybe all of it, because of other penalties?
Yes, that was a special environmental project, and that came about as a result of our other penalties that were incurred in our old plant.
Okay.
Involving at least two spills and some MMPs, as I recall.
The way it was worded, it could very easily have been read as simply altruistic.
No, and I understand my obligation as a discharger,
okay,
such that, yeah.
And then you criticize the enforcement staff for not providing information on the stream flows to see if there were dilution effects, and that's fine for you to criticize them, but this is also your opportunity to present evidence in support of your case. So did you, I assume you didn't, because otherwise we would have the information, but you chose not to look at stream flow records to defend yourself as far as possibly having dilution effects. Is that right?
I do not have stream flow data with me today, no.
Okay. That's it, Mr. Chair. Thanks.
Okay. Dr. Hunter.
Yeah, just one thought, Mr. Swanberg. I think the connection between the SEP and the hearing that occurred as a result of the information that was presented that gave us a chance to understand what the SEP would do, that's probably one issue, but I do believe that because of the nature of the spill and the report in the newspapers, there was a lot of public awareness, and as a result, we saw a lot of public interest and comment coming to the board regarding what the action was going to be, and I suspect that that level of activity would have triggered a hearing whether or not the SEP was involved. That's my impression, and I recognize that there are different ways that hearings are triggered. And from my perspective, the information and comments that came to us through public comment that were submitted in writing prior to the hearing. Those issues were substantive and raised questions that we felt we needed to consider more carefully. So, I agree. We see those steps as being very positive and consider your willingness to look at a broader set of ecological issues and ways in which those fine monies can be dedicated to improve the environment. So we appreciate that, and we do take that into account, at least I do. So thank you for that. But I hope that clarifies a little bit in my mind how the hearing, the purpose of the hearing that day was also triggered by public interest.
Had we accepted, as we have the right to do, the MMP complaint, there is a place at the bottom of the letter to sign the acceptance, and the executive officer then accepts it, and it would have never come to board hearing, and there would have never been that opportunity. Now, maybe that's not right. Maybe the lack of public comment in that process is a deficiency that the state needs to look at in its processes. But the reality of it is, ma'am, that I could have accepted that earlier MMP, and it would have never come before this board.
Well, just from my perspective, the newspaper accounts were pretty significant, and there was a series of newspaper accounts, and I'm guessing at this point that there were letters triggered by that set of newspaper accounts. So I think the process was something people were aware of that understand the role that the regional board plays in those types of violations.
Well, and I think the newspaper accounts that you're referring to were in regards to the wastewater spill in January when our brand new generator decided not to work. And that went without board hearing because we accepted the penalty.
Mr. Swanberg, your comment and argument about could have done something strikes me a certain way. It's like a criminal defendant saying, gee, I could have taken the plea agreement, the plea bargain, but I decided to go to trial, and things turned out worse than I expected. Had you agreed to accept, you said you had agreed to accept the penalty at that point in time.
Correct. We had agreed to. The only thing we did was further take the step of trying to return some of those penalty monies to this region to improve the local environment.
Yeah. Well, I it is an artifact of how the process is set up that allows the public to, weigh in. So,
And I don't oppose the public input. Understand.
Yeah. My take on it, what I recall, is that I was most concerned about the fish kill and the chlorine discharges.
Right.
And that did arise from listening to public comment. And I think what the board wanted was staff to go back and take another look at this and to come back and focus on it a little differently because we felt that the fish kill and the chlorine was a serious component of the violations.
And I can't argue that that's...
No, I know. But I wanted you to know it just wasn't the fact of the SCP having complicated things or sent this off in a different direction. It was something else, and it was the chlorine and the fish kill.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Another thing is that I don't believe you were present at that hearing, if I remember right.
I was not.
And... That means there isn't really an opportunity it wasn't noticed for some alternative action, and by the board scheduling it to come back, it does provide you with an opportunity to respond as opposed to then we just had one-sided arguments basically from the public. So this does provide a level playing field as far as opportunity for all sides to air the evidence.
And I'm not complaining that it isn't a level playing field in front of this board. I merely was indicating that the practical reality was, as a discharger, if in the future I were representing a discharger in Region 3 and there was an MMP complaint and there was any possibility that there was anything in there that could set somebody off, I would not propose a set. I would just accept the MMP.
Well, people will make their decisions,
that's
you know,
true.
Based on a case-by-case scenario. I take back my analogy. I want you to know
okay.
it's inappropriate for this context. But your comment about the chlorine and the damage and no evidence of how much dilution took place, I think what you've told us, though, is that you would at least admit that at some point, if you're discharging beyond 2 milligrams per liter, that there's going to be an effect in the receiving water. That's kind of a given.
Yeah, and we know for a fact that 4.2 had that effect.
Yeah.
In the water flows as of that day.
Right.
And when you double that to 10, I will agree it is definitely plausible that the fish kills when it was 10.
Yeah.
And when it was 20 on those two occasions, I would be pretty hard-pressed to say that common sense wouldn't suggest to me that there were probably associated fish kills. That's 4 instances.
Right.
And 4 only.
Right. Let's see.
If I might, one last thing. This is my last board appearance. I will not be handling this region any longer. And when I leave today, I would like to introduce Mike Davis, who, the lucky gentleman that will succeed me in dealing with CMC matters. I'm hoping that you'll never see him again after today. But if you do, Mike Davis.
Thanks, Mr. Swanberg. Yeah, Mike Davis, CDCR staff, senior staff counsel, Sacramento, California. I took the oath. As Mr. Swanberg said, I think I could speak for both of us, hoping that this introduction will serve as a nice introduction, but my times visiting you will be hopefully very infrequent. But I look to the extent that it does occur, and I think CMC is doing a great job, as Mr. Swanberg said, in getting this new plant further and further along on compliance. But anyway, I look forward to the extent that it occurs to working with you cooperatively, and I thank you for your time.
Thank you. Okay. Let's see.